The Kickoff.
Rock, sport and talk.
Radio City Talk.
As promised, let's talk to Michael Owen about this wonderful new book, Reboot, My Life, My Time. Morning to you, Michael.
Good morning. How's things?
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. You're at your stables, are you?
I am, actually. I've just been, I've been all over the place lately, but a morning at the stables and then just... Yeah, on the school run today.
good lad. Just like the rest of us, you see. Just, no problem at all. Right, Michael, great book. I haven't read all of it as yet. It's fair to say, I mean, most people might just want to skip the first part because it's maybe halfway through and onwards, isn't it, from once you left Liverpool, that people really seem to take a great interest in, really, and what happened from then on onwards. You know, let's just jump to 2004 and the leaving of Liverpool. Is that a big regret of yours?
Well, you know, I don't really do regrets, I suppose. I mean, of course, you know, part of me wishes that, you know, I did the same as a Jamie Carragher or a Steven Gerrard type of thing. But then again, you know, I don't kick myself in many ways because I know at the time, I mean, I had all the facts in front of me. I thought, you know, it was a huge dilemma, a huge, you know, life changer, really. Real Madrid asking you to go there. And as I've said in the book, it's one of those, you know, just to experience that, you know, would it have been, you know, a good thing, a bad thing? You will never know. But I could have been sat here now saying to you, I could have gone to Real Madrid at some point in my career, and I said no, and I've been thinking, what would it have been like? Mm. You know, those great players, that stadium, that kit, that, you know, new, yeah, new country, a language, all these things, and I just thought, oh, I've got to give it a go. And I kept referring back to Ian Rush and thinking, he did it. He went and he came back, and I just, in my mind, I sort of convinced myself, well, you know, don't worry, you can always come back. I spoke to Rick Parry, the chief exec at the club at the time, and of course, we left on great terms, so everything about the deal, I thought, well, I've almost got a bit of reassurance that I'm going to come back anyway. And that's what ultimately made me think, come on, I've just got to give this a go. Just have a look at it. And of course, once you do that once, you hope everything's going to turn out perfectly. But of course, it didn't. And as much as I tried, it was always difficult to obviously get back.
I mean, you even talk about the doubts on the plane going to Madrid, don't you?
Well, I do. I mean, tears on the way to the airport, things like that, because as soon as you sign on the dotted line, you think, oh, my word, you know, all that I've ever wanted, all that I've ever worked for, you know, everything now, it's just a total change in my life. I mean, I've been at the academy since I was a baby, really. Mm. And then all of a sudden, you read about transfers and you see it happening all around you, but you just never think that that's going to be you. I mean, I just assumed that I was going to be a Liverpool player all my life, but obviously... Something like that. I mean, it literally was. I mean, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they're probably the only two teams that can come in when you're a Liverpool player that are going to make you think a little bit. And of course, for all those reasons I just spoke about, that was that they were the reasons I went.
I mean, why didn't the return happen? You had talks back in Liverpool with Rafa and Rick Parry, etc., at one of the former players' houses. So why didn't it come off?
Well, quite simply, I mean, we'd met Rafa, everything was great. My agent had met Rick Parry, and everything was sort of agreed. By the time I flew back to Madrid for pre-season, you know, to resume pre-season training, Newcastle had come in and put a big bid in, which was probably about double what Liverpool were about to offer. And we were just about to play a game. I was in my hotel room. And the president of Real Madrid knocked on my door and told me that Newcastle had put a £16 million bid in. And said, you know, we want to keep you, but, you know, it is also a big offer. And if you want to go back to the Premier League, then we will sort of let you go on these terms. And I said, well, obviously I want to go to Liverpool. And he was like, well, that's not one of the options, you know. It's staying here or going to Newcastle. And I basically argued and argued and argued, and you know, we parted, let's say, from that conversation with me thinking, right, how are we going to get, you know, manipulate this to get back to Liverpool? And unfortunately, having spoken to Rick Parry and done all we could, Liverpool just weren't in a position at that time to to offer the money or match the money that Newcastle were offering.
Wow.
So unfortunately, I had two options, and to be fair, I needed that clarity. I needed to speak to Rick Parry because, you know, just to hear it from his mouth saying, "Well, we can't do this deal now." It was almost, you know, I was almost just hanging on with hope for you know, a good few days, thinking, "Come on, you know, Liverpool will, even if Liverpool go to 12 million, that's good enough, because then I'll just sort of plant my heels in and I'll say to President, okay, I'll stay at Madrid," him knowing that I would move. And I also knew that Real Madrid wanted to raise some money to sign Sergio Ramos at the time. So there was all these things going through my mind. But when Rick Parry said he couldn't raise it, you know, anything more than eight, I just knew that wasn't going to happen then.
So it was purely business from Real Madrid's sense, and a resignation on your part. And obviously it's been well documented now what happened at Newcastle and your comments around the club. I just want to touch on the subsequent move to Manchester United. I mean, it could have been Everton, couldn't it? And you do say in the book that you didn't know who'd hate you more, whether the fans would hate you more going to Man United rather than Everton. I think it was Man United.
It was one of those. I mean, of course, when I left Newcastle, when my contract expired, you know, my performances weren't right up to where they had been in previous years. Of course, everyone knows about, you know, some injuries I had and how that sort of slowed me down and you know, took a bit of sparkle away from myself as a player, really. And of course, you finish your contract and I didn't, you know, have anything in place, so to speak, and you toddle off on your summer holidays and just hope that, you know, a few clubs are going to come in and you've got a nice choice to make. Of course, Liverpool were the first port of call again. Again, my trusted friend, Jamie Carragher, was on the phone to him and, you know, he went and saw Brendan Rodgers and all the rest of it. But again, it was never to be. You know, Brendan had a great team at the time, you know, the Sturridges and the Suarezes and all these players. So time moves on and I totally accept that and appreciate that. So it was time to look elsewhere again. And, you know, we were waiting and waiting and waiting to see who was coming in. And as you said, I mean, I had three options as it was. Hull City were probably the first team to come in, and with all due respect to Hull, it was never going to be a good career move. I didn't feel to go to a team right at the bottom of the Premier League or near the bottom. And then the other two options were Everton. David Moyes expressed an interest, and obviously Sir Alex Ferguson did as well. So it was at that point I knew that if I had angered a few people at Liverpool by going and having a bash at going to Real Madrid, then I knew I was going to anger even more people. But, you know, at an age that I was, you know, where could I get, what could I do at that point? I had to just choose what was best for my career and to stay on top of the game. And that was when I made my decision.
But you had big conversations with David Moyes.
I did, yeah. I did have big conversations. I mean, well, at the end of the day, I was, you know, I was out of work, so to speak, on a Bosman transfer and needed a club. And of course, you know, you're always going to look at your options. And those were my three options. And pretty much I, you know, ruled the whole situation out in my mind straight away. And then it was down to two. And of course, just my luck that they were the two that were probably the biggest rivals to the team that I had made my name, which was just how the cards fell.
And how on earth did you end up at Stoke City? Michael Owen and Stoke City, it's just not a fit, Michael.
Well, again, you know, you finish at Manchester United and again, you're on a free transfer and again, you're there in the summer and you're waiting to see who's interested and basically the two options there were Sunderland and Stoke, and at the time, obviously, two teams in the Premier League. I'd been on the bench for a few years in general, you know, playing, coming on and things like that. But I'd been on the bench for a while. And I just thought at 33, well, at 32 at the time, I thought, come on, I'm a bit too young to retire, even though, you know, football was starting to not be what it was just because of my performance. You know, I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. And that was the decision then. Shall I retire or shall I, you know, go to one of these clubs and play a bit more? And of course, I had the same dilemma with Sunderland because of my Newcastle spell there. And I thought, you know, Stoke, I can live at home. You know, it's a club that were in and around mid-table in the Premier League. I thought I'd play a little bit more and give it one last blast. But quickly realised that the game was almost, you know, up for me, let's say, in terms of ready for retirement.
And one particular game in particular.
Say that again, sorry.
And one particular game when you know your time is up.
Yeah, exactly. It's very difficult when you're getting older. You know, you need to keep playing, keep active and things. And when you're not playing, and then all of a sudden after 3 months of doing nothing, sitting on the bench, hardly coming on, all of a sudden you get asked to play, and you're just not tuned in. You're not, you know, it's almost like you're coming back from injury for a while if you're not actively involved on a regular basis. So, and I just found myself in that game against Crystal Palace just feeling out of touch. My touch felt awful. I just felt sluggish. And I just thought then, this is not for me. I'm used to playing good teams with you know,
quality players, yeah,
and loads of the ball. And it was just, you know, my powers were waning, basically.
Alan Shearer, well documented. Have you spoke to him since?
No, I haven't. No. It's, I mean, you know, as I say, the book is hopefully a very honest account of my career. You know, in general, I'm, you know, very quiet, shy lad. I certainly don't look for confrontation, things like that, but, you know, certain things happened in my career and I was purely putting my point across. Obviously, Alan's got a certain version as well, which is all documented in the book. But no, sadly, we were big mates at one point, but unfortunately, I think Alan blames me slightly for the situation that occurred when he was manager and me not playing, or I played, but not being fully fit in the last game of the season when Newcastle went down. So all very disappointing.
Well, social media doesn't help nowadays, does it?
Well, it helps and hinders. Obviously, it's you know, it's a far cry from when I was playing, and you know, there was no social media. Everything was reported through, you know, radio, through newspapers, things like that. But now the world is changing, and it's great for some players. They can, you know, express their own personality and things like that. But then again, it has its downs as well. Of course, there's a lot of abuse there and things like that. So, you know, we live in a new world and you've just got to roll with it.
And life after football, I mean, I know you did a bit of BT Sport. You enjoying life after football?
Yeah, well, it remains in football, really. My life is about television work. I mean, I do 70 broadcasting days a year. And then various businesses, as you mentioned, the same as now. This is a great business that I've built over the years that I really enjoy. And loads of different things. Obviously, I wrote a book, and then there's a few commercial partners and things like that. Of course, I still get to games. And then you've got 4 kids that keep you occupied as well. So, no, life's really good.
And Liverpool, Newcastle, of course, this weekend. You and Alan Shearer aren't going to be there, are you? You're not covering that one.
I'm actually working on the game. I'm down in London working on the Premier League worldwide feed on the game. So, yeah, looking forward to that one, obviously, to my old team. So, you've got to fancy Liverpool, obviously, at home, the run that they're on and all the rest of it. But no, should be good. Premier League's back after the international break.
You'd have liked to have played under Klopp, wouldn't you?
Oh, imagine it. No, it's an attacking player's dream, isn't it? That's it. I mean, to be fair, it was brilliant under Brendan Rodgers, but Klopp, again, has just taken it to a new level. Mm. But just being a Liverpool supporter over this last decade, I mean, there's been great times for a long time, but this last decade, it's an absolute pleasure going to Anfield. You're almost guaranteed a great game, and it's a team to be proud of at the moment.
I mean, it must irk you, finally, Michael. I mean, I had the pleasure of commentating on most of your games at Radio City during the halcyon days, you know, between sort of 98 and 2004. And it must irk you that you're not revered as you should be as a Liverpool player, from my personal point of view.
Well, it's very kind of you to say so. And listen, there's so many Liverpool fans out there, and it's very easy just to categorise people and you know, make them all the same, just like fans might do the same with a football team and individual players. Everyone's different. You know, I walk the streets and, you know, I've never ever experienced any Liverpool fan ever come up to me and have a cross word, you know, when I meet people and whatever. They're all very complimentary, and if I judge everything off that, then, you know, I'm obviously still respected by Liverpool fans. And obviously, that's vice versa. And if you mentioned social media, I mean, if you look at social media, then it's a different story. But I think if you think that or believe that any of that is true on social media, then you have got a problem, because, you know, it's a toxic place at times. But no, I mean, day to day, I still, you know, feel part of it, still feel happy and still can hold my head up high. So no, it's no problem. It is what it is. I made my decisions, of course, and have to live with that for the rest of my life. But I've got no issues with that.
Michael, great. You should be very proud. I'm sure you are. Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time today, Michael. It's a great book as well. So we're going to recommend it to all our listeners out there. Thank you for your time today, Michael.
No problems. Great to talk.
Thanks very much indeed. That's Michael Owen talking about his new book, Reboot, My Life, My Time. And it is fantastic.
The Kickoff.
Rock, sport and talk.
Radio City Talk.